back in to Ruthless Aggression. I'm Pierce. It is September 26th. We have a little about 10 days. No, not even 10 days because it's not Sunday anymore. A little less than 9 days away until Bad Blood. So we'll dive into that next week when we get closer to the pay-per-view and the card is fully fleshed out. I mean, so much to talk about, so we're just going to jump into it. The Vince McMahon documentary, Mr. McMahon, is out. It is on Netflix, all 6 parts. They range about an hour a piece, so there's a lot. It's one of those documentaries that, like, it flows so well and quickly, and obviously for us, we know the story, we've heard the stories, you know, whether it's through WWE's offering, which is very skewed, or it's through secondary news. But it allows the story to move so quickly. If I can get to the 6th part, I've watched all 6. Rob, you said you've watched the first 2.
Yeah, the first 2.
And the final, the actual meat of the stuff that we were coming for, which is the allegations, and even the Benoit shit, and the early portion of the 6th episode, the last episode, you really start to feel how fair and balanced it actually is, which is refreshing, so refreshing for a WWE-based documentary that is not Dark Side of the Ring. You know, so that's my full takeway on it. It was like, if you're worried about this documentary and worried if it's going to be fair on both sides, it is. You give them credit for being able to just delicately bounce back, because it's hard knowing that your last contact with Vince was before he had resigned and stepped down the first time back in 2022. So very little of the interviews were done after the most recent allegation in 2024. But I feel like they've done a good job of kind of layering everything and being fair to the case.
Yeah, again, just through the first 2, like, you know, I have seen some reviews where people are like, you know, they don't go hard enough on Vince, which I think they do more than I was expecting them to. Like, obviously, you know, the retirement and everything that came with that, you know, I figured that would be addressed because it's such a big part of the story. I knew they do the interviews before that, but, like, you know, just even in the second episode, you know, they brought up the steroid scandal and the Ring Boy stuff. And I know the Benoit stuff's coming. I know the Owen stuff is coming. So, like, I know they didn't get, you know, super into the current ongoing legal stuff. And, you know, I think that was just a timing thing. But, like, I think it's been more of a, you know, kind of like you said, where it's kind of been more like a Dark Side of the Ring sort of thing than a, you know, WWE-produced documentary, because that's not what it is. And, I mean, Bill Simmons kind of said the whole time he didn't want it to be that. And, you know, I think people think they're pulling too many of their punches. But through the first 2 episodes, I don't really see that. I'm not going to say, you know, I'm sitting here learning a bunch of stuff I didn't know. But also, these sorts of documentaries aren't necessarily for people like us. They're for people who don't have the knowledge to the extent.
Precisely. And I mean, most of these stories, like, you hear about them, you don't hear too much in depth of them. You didn't know that, maybe you didn't know that Phil Mushnick was pushing after them or whatever. Maybe you didn't understand, like, you know, what went on with, you know, the interviews, the thing with David Schultz, and all that other stuff. They talked about Hogan stooging out Ventura, which I felt was something that was, you know, fair that they did there. Yeah. They cover the first 2, they covered a lot of ground, and certainly ground that a lot of people in the past have not. I think that if there's anything that is, like, sort of clear based on the first 2 parts, also, is that it's, like, it's supposed to be this way, I guess, considering that Vince is so attached to the company, but he reads, like, a history of the company as well. Which is, like, you know, it kind of is what it is, but for, like, us who know this stuff, it's, you know, a little dry in that.
Yeah, and I mean, again,
like, we know the importance of Mania 1. We know the importance of Mania 3. We know Mania 2 was
an abject
disaster they will never do again.
Yeah. No, and I think, you know, what the thing is, too, like, the first episode was kind of dry, but, you know, the second episode, they get into stuff, and,
I think, you know, this is obviously for us, you know, for what we need to watch and whatever, but when we get into the Attitude Era stuff, and that and the stuff with the screw job and whatnot, that's where, you know, most of it will also pick up in intensity, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that makes a lot more sense. And again, I'm going to try and finish it before the weekend. You know, it's intriguing. You know, it's been a lot to kind of follow and watch. And I think so far, again, it's been a good job. And, you know, I don't really know what people were expecting.
Yeah, I guess from that standpoint, but also for people to sit here and say, like, okay, I understand any gripe over not spending more. They probably spend more than like 30 seconds on Jimmy Snuka, right?
Yeah,
that's probably the one that they probably could have strengthened out. But also, like, the briefcase stuff is all like hearsay. I don't know if there's anything like substantial that you could have put within that. Like, maybe if you want to ask, like, hey, Vince, did you have anything to do with Snuka getting off of the case? But it's all like up some unconstantial shit. Beyond that, like, I think they did a good job of the major moments within McMahon and wrestling. Like you mentioned, the Ring Boy trial, you know, focusing on the guys behind the scenes, and then also Pat Patterson and why he was let back so fucking quickly as Vince's right-hand man. You know, going into even like, and this is a couple episodes down the line, so you haven't gotten into yet, Sable.
Yeah.
You know, there's some stuff that they did rightful justice to. Ashley, I don't even know if, I can't remember if they mentioned Ashley's suicide. They probably had to. But like acknowledging cases like that as well, like it's hard to structure it all. And this is coming from producer. It's hard to structure everything in the manner that you think, especially for a documentary, that you think is most important. Obviously, most important at this time period are the allegations against Vince. But it's not doing the viewer any justice if you're just diving right into that and you're not getting to know Vince McMahon, the person, the promoter, things that led up to the things that happened to him in his past and may have triggered something. Like, and that's the other things is like, he's very, to me, watching this documentary is because you're getting like clips of like, okay, I see, obviously personality traits or just, you know, tendencies that may have led to him being the man that he is today. You know, like, getting that proper insight into Vince McMahon and who he is and the shit that he's been through in his life that may have led to a lot of the incidents that he has had. Those are very important, and I did enjoy the way that they let those out and structured those. You see in episode 3, it begins with the New York screw job. You got Wendy Richter on there talking about it and how she kind of, you know, got blindsided and didn't understand it, but or didn't see it coming, but she understood it was business and ending on the screw job. So kudos to the director, producers, everybody involved for, you know, putting it together and then also taking the time with it and understanding after the allegations started to pour out, hey, we got to make a hard pivot, you know, and tell the story the proper way. So,
yeah. Yeah. No, I'm excited to watch the rest of it. I've thought it's been pretty good. For sure.
It has been. Real quick, just circling around all of the new additions that have been happening in pro wrestling. So by the time we talk to you guys next week, CW will be having NXT.
Yep.
We have seen Julia in the last couple of weeks, and this past Tuesday, we got our first glimpse of Stephanie Vacher in NXT. You know, the Motor City Machine Guns are coming. They're not going to NXT from what we hear, but we know the Lucha Brothers are coming. There's talks about possibly Daniel Garcia being a big target of WWE in the very near future. His contract's coming up. We're even hearing about contract talks or lack of contract talks with dudes in WWE. AJ Styles is 47 years old and in last year of his contract and not working a lot. Shinsuke Nakamura has only worked a handful of matches this year. He has last worked on the house show scene in Europe last month. So it's a lot of movement. It's a lot of stagnation. It's a lot of WWE pushing out older talent. You say that quote unquote because, I mean, you look at the fucking Motor City Machine Guns, right? But it's interesting the cards that are being dealt and shuffling around the board here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost like it seems like Lashley and Shelton MVP are going to AEW. So it's like it's kind of switched where, like, kind of the old guys are starting to go there. And if you get a Garcia or, you know, the Lucha Bros or whatever in return, they've been talked about too. Like, you know, WWE, it was going the other way for so long where, you know, all the young guys are going to AEW and now it's turned back around. I mean, it's just kind of the natural order of things.
And I think that that has also a lot to do really with the systems in place and how they are and how they work. The reason it looks so attractive in the first place, NXT that is, was because of the fact that you had people who were, you know, you had the promise of stardom off of the Shield and Seth Rollins alone.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that developed and progressed into Sammy, and it progressed into Paige, and it progressed into all the women, and it progressed into all that. Everyone can say whatever they want to about the takeovers and all that stuff that happened between 2016 and 21. It was a situation where you had to be on the indie playground. That's what they became. They became a super indie.
Mm-hmm.
And for a while, like you said, you had people moving. Because it was the same thing offered on a bigger platform with more money.
Yeah.
Now, you have this situation where with NXT, those people aren't paid like they are on the main roster. Mm-hmm. They never were in the first place. But with how they've been trotting on and moving along now back to where they should have been in the first place, you now have a situation where that looks a lot more attractive than just plodding around and hoping things go right in the other place while you might be highly paid. But whereas someone like Lashley and like Chubb and like MVP, they are going over there. And is that an issue? It's being argued, perhaps it is. Because, you know, they're taking a page out of, you don't want to say it, but it's sort of TNA-ish how it's turning out for them right now. AEW, that is.
To an extent, but, yes.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can argue they shouldn't let talent like Bobby Lashley go by the wayside. Fine, he obviously is a name brand, I get that. But to be fair, just because someone's out there doesn't mean that you don't have to, mean you have to sign them or don't have to sign them.
Yeah.
Because there's plenty of wrestling talent out there.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the big established household names.
No.
You could, if you wanted to, you could invest in some other places. And you could do that. They don't appear to want to.
No.
Because they're obviously in a situation where they need fixes and they need names, whereas WWE can take their time because they already know that their NXT people face a disadvantage anyway.
Yeah.
Because they are not as exposed and they don't have the reach that main roster TV does.
Yeah. No, it's going to be interesting to kind of watch how the, you know, wrestling war, if you want to call it that, or whatever, continues to evolve. You know, now that WWE is still doing well, you know, AEW is going to have the new TV deal. They're both going to kind of be stable for, because, yeah, obviously WWE was unstable for a few years with all the Vince stuff, and they're stable. Right. You know, AEW will be stable at least financially and have a spot on TV. It'll be interesting to see how that whole thing kind of plays out in the next
stage here. To your point, I think my thing to watch, maybe this isn't going to be something you see within the next 3 months, probably six, probably a year, probably even 18. It's clear to me that WWE is a very narrative-driven company right now.
Mm-hmm.
Their TV has become incredibly narrative-driven. They don't have traditional championship matches that happen every couple weeks with all their champions. They don't always wrestle.
Yeah.
Who is going to buy into that? Who isn't going to buy into that?
Yeah.
Because you can say whatever you want to. These people, it's the same reason why in years past, even with a booker who wouldn't adapt, those wrestlers couldn't succeed there because of what the booker wanted and what they were used to. Is that going to affect anyone in WWE? Is anyone going to be pushed beyond their limits that they don't know? And are they going to see that? And are they going to go, this isn't working for me, I need to go somewhere else?
Yeah.
Because everyone wants to talk about, and we're going from AEW to WWE, because it's the easy thing to do right now because AEW is down. That's correct. But as more people go over,
where do you think those spots are going to come from? They can't keep they want to keep everybody. It seems like they're making an effort to keep everybody after the last person in talent relations clearly wasn't doing their job well enough. But that doesn't mean that they can. That doesn't mean that the wrestlers will. So I think all of this and all of those changes and whatnot at surface level and beneath the surface are going to be fascinating to watch now that there's a lot of change going back and forth between the two. Rob, you said this for years. It's fun when it's like this.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's the thing.
It just is.
Yeah.
It absolutely is. I think the only other thing of mention would be that congrats to all wrestling fans. Your dream has come true. SmackDown's going to move for 3 hours once Raw goes over to Netflix. It was the most logical thing to do.
It is the most logical thing to do. Because, first of all, USA was not dropping 5 hours of television and only we're only going to get two, and we'll only get those once every three or four.
Well, they should have made more of an effort to keep the other two.
You don't know what they did or didn't. I mean, they got SmackDown. SmackDown was the show that was getting the more exposure and had the bigger stars.
Yeah,
they had Roman Reigns on the damn show, for God's sake.
No, I understand.
They got a big deal for it. They just went for Netflix.
Yeah, it's been a 2-hour show for 25 years.
So what? That doesn't mean anything. That is, if you don't want to watch it, just watch it on the weekend.
For what I see, it's, hey, we had 3 hours of Raw on USA. They were probably going to buy into 3 hours of SmackDown, and what ended up happening was, Raw needed a home. Well, you already got 3 hours on Fridays.
Exactly, yeah.
Then, okay, we'll just buy into an extra hour. And then do for the time being, it'll be 2 hours Raw, 2 hours SmackDown, so the shit moves. And it was the best, you know, thing that they could do for the time being. So, from a network standpoint, nothing changes besides your show moving from Monday nights to Friday nights.
Exactly.
You're still getting 3 hours of content for USA. So, it's totally understandable that USA would not want to give up the extra hour that they lose out.
Correct.
And that WWE wouldn't want to lose out the extra hour of TV advertising. I don't know about social media, but streaming and how the shit works over there, but very valuable to have those 3 hours of advertising or, you know, in the event that one's a streamless hour, 2 hours. It's very valuable. They weren't going to lose that shit. So,
yeah.
I weep for all the wrestling fans like, I got to spend 3 hours watching wrestling on a Friday. Like, sorry.
You don't have to.
You don't have to. You can DVR it.
Yeah, exactly. You can watch it on the weekend. You can watch the condensed version wherever that goes. Hulu, Peacock.
Yeah, done with Hulu, I believe.
Yeah, they're going to be done with Hulu. I think SmackDown's going to be next day on Peacock.
Okay.
Raw's pretty much Netflix.
Yeah, that probably on demand right away,
exactly.
If I can imagine. But
the thing that I will say about SmackDown, the reason that I like it so much, twofold. One, they've made a thing out of their shows before their Saturday shows, the one nights. Now that there are multiple two nights, we have to talk about them like that. They're one nights. They always have it be a night one.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now you can really do that with a 3-hour show. You can put on a big production, have some really big matches, and get a big audience if you really wanted to. You could go all in with that and have... And everyone is like, why aren't they on the pay-per-view? Now, if they're on a 3-hour SmackDown that they hype up and go all in with, which they clearly know how to do that with their advertising nowadays, then they can make that seem a little sweeter. For the wrestler, I hope that they get paid a little more, but that's just me and that, for that conversation. For second, listen, I get it, but at the same time, they have too much talent. And also, to another point, this is going to sound like a lot of self-preservation on my behalf as a fan. Charlotte's coming back. She's going to SmackDown because Andrade is there.
Yeah.
She's going to more than likely be involved in a title program on SmackDown when she comes back. Be serious about it. It's Charlotte Flair. The extra hour is surely going to save at least one or two women on the road to WrestleMania, and if that doesn't happen, I'll be stuck.
Yeah.
Someone is going to get a nice little lifeboat because of the fact that SmackDown is adding an hour. Is it going to be Bayley? Is it going to be Tiff Stratton? Will it be Nia? Will it be Jade? Will it be Bianca? Will it be all of the above? I don't know. But someone is going to get a life raft out of this situation. And they'll be helped by it.
Could be Apollo Crews.
It could be.
Yeah.
It could, yeah. It doesn't even have to be a woman. It could be a guy.
It's true.
It could be a tag team. It could be the Prophets. They've been itching to get through. Maybe the extra hour will allow them to get some development.
Yeah. No, fair enough.
It's going to help somebody. It's just a matter of who. Also, thank God. I know it was hot. I know it was part of the show. I know it's a big deal. It's a 3-hour show. I don't want to count my chickens before they hatch, but I don't think the Bloodline is going to take up at least half the show. I'm fine.
Yeah, no, probably not.
Fine with that.
Yeah, fair enough.
All right, let's go back. I think we got SummerSlam to get through, and then
SummerSlam and Unforgiven.
Oh man,
we're doubling up because they're only two weeks apart for some reason.
Yeah.
So we're just doubling up, and next week we'll get through the rest of September, and we'll be about back on track. So it'll be good stuff.
Also, we finally have the SummerSlam 2025 location.
We do. They're MetLife, another two-night deal.
I'm not going.
No, fuck that.
I'm sorry.
We've all been to MetLife. We don't need to go back.
Yeah, I turned to a partner, and I was just like, all the fucking logistical errors that could come from this, on top of having the commute from Philly.
I don't think so. Exactly.
It was 99 on August 1st this year in East London.
It's hot out there, man.
Good luck.
Yeah.
It's hot and fucking muggy.
All right, so we're at the week of August the 11th of 2008, and our top five songs, Viva La Vida stays at 5, Take a Bow is down to 4, Disturbia is up to 3, so again, 2 Rihanna songs here, Forever is up to 2, and I Kissed a Girl is still at number 1.
And for the record, the Olympics began last Friday.
They did. Famed opening ceremonies of the 2008 Olympics from Beijing and the Bird's Nest. What a time.
Yes.
I know we have some sports to get into later. I mean, if you want to
Week by week. Yeah, I'll look at some of the stuff that happened here on the weekend. Patty Harrington won the PGA Championship in Bloomfield Hills, Michigan.
Now, there you go.
Over Ben Curtis and Sergio Garcia. Kyle Busch won the Centurion Boats at the Glen at Watkins Glen. There's some basketball stuff going on in the Olympics. Obviously, doesn't look like the U.S. has played yet.
Yeah, we can check.
Oh wait, yes, actually, no. I'm sorry, no. No, that's actually the women. The women did on Saturday. They won by 40 over the Czech Republic.
There we go.
Men have not. Oh yes, men actually did play on Sunday, they won 101-70 over China.
The redeemed team.
Yes, the redeemed team. Out to make good for the shamockery in Athens.
Yeah. Top five movies. Down to 5 is Mamma Mia. Up to 4 is Sister of the Traveling Pants 2. Down to 3 is The Mummy. Up to 2 is Pineapple Express. And staying at number 1 yet again is The Dark Knight.
You mentioned, real quick before we go into the shows, you mentioned the Olympics and Olympic basketball, and this is the Olympics before 2012, and all I could think about today, as Derrick Rose announced his retirement, was he was so fucking close to getting a gold medal.
Yep.
Because I wanted him to be on that Olympic team so bad, knowing the significance coming off of the redeem team. You know, besides Chris Paul really not having that stellar point guard, and, you know, Rose is going to be that. Rose and Westbrook were going to be that. And, yeah, they got ripped away from him. It sucks. But congrats to Rose, man. Got to throw that out, though.
Yeah. And, all right, so on August 10th, Randy Orton was riding his motorcycle and apparently flew off it and broke his collarbone. There's not, like, a ton of information out there, which – make of that what you will, but I think he was set to come back soon, especially since he shows up in a couple weeks, and he's gonna probably be out of action for the rest of the year yet again. So real bummer. Injuries are kind of the theme of this month, as they've kind of been the theme of most of this year.
Yeah,
it does not get any better. Raw from Richmond, Virginia. John Cena's here. His match with Batista. Now they're tag champions. They won the belts last week. Doesn't know why it's the first time ever match with Batista coming up at SummerSlam, because he never had an issue with Batista, but business is business.
I don't know why you worry.
John Cena is the king of random fucking tag team runs.
He is, because, again, they did it last year with Sean, and then he has one with one of the Nexus guys.
Didn't he have a tag? Yeah. Didn't he have a tag run with Orton? Maybe I'm blanking.
Yeah, he did.
Yes. Yes, they did. That also happened. So he never really had, like, an actual tag title run, because, you know, by the time... But, yeah, they just kind of used it as a plot device. Tonight, him and Batista have a rematch against Cody and Ted, and Batista comes out. You know, they're friends tonight, but Sunday they're enemies. Cena says they've answered a ton of questions, but never which one of them is better. They're doing a good job. They are doing a good job building the match, but again, I don't know why you couldn't just do it at WrestleMania, considering both guys don't really do anything super memorable.
No.
I mean,
no.
You know, Cena...
I lied on that, by the way. It was, he was tag team champs with The Miz.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Yeah, I mean, I don't know. Batista says he understands why people want to see him beat Cena senseless, which he plans to do, but it's not personal. Every opponent he's ever wrestled, he's looked to beat senseless, and Cena wants to see who's better. Batista says it's going to be him. Cena offers him a handshake, and after thinking it over, Batista agrees and shakes his hand. And then to open our action, Beth Phoenix defeats Kelly Kelly.
Yep. And Tino Morella defeated Mickie James.
Sure did. Mike Adamly has an idea. Kane against Chris Jericho, but Kane needs to give up his burlap sack. Kids are going back to school soon, and they'll be scared of Kane. Thanks, Mike. Kane says he's not going to do that, and that's how that segment goes. I can't do Mike Adamly, guys.
No.
Can't do it.
No.
Yeah. Again, I don't want to be too hard on him. I know he's in a bad way, but, you know. Cody and Ted say they're a team. Cena and Batista are not a team, and that's why they're going to win the tag titles back tonight. Speaking of tag teams, Crime Time defeat the Highlanders, who still work there.
They do.
For now. That might change by the end of this month, actually. Yeah. I don't remember. JBL's here, so is CM Punk. They're going to have a face-to-face. JBL starts talking about Punk, and Punk cuts him off immediately. He's tired of everyone disrespecting him. Just because people think he doesn't fit the champion persona does not mean it's true. He's watched every single SummerSlam, and now he's going to defend the title at SummerSlam, so that means something to him. You know, with all respect to Batista and John Cena, Punk is the man right now. JBL doesn't care about that, though. The people came to see him, and they don't care about CM Punk. He broke in on some no-name independent and then went to ECW and got to Raw on a fluke and won the title on a fluke. JBL says that Punk has talent, but he's got 6 days left to champion. JBL can beat him at anything he chooses. He challenges him to a drinking contest, and Punk doesn't go with it because, you know, straight edge and all that. JBL says that if Punk doesn't drink, he won't beat him on Sunday, and Punk thinks it over and then throws the drink at him and hits him with a Shining Wizard. It was effective. Good segment.
Yeah, it was effective. Did what it had to do. Jericho beat Kane. Mike Adamly came out and had a long talking segment. Back at Rey Mysterio's mask in it. Did Kane tell?
He seems to have alluded to that.
Regal defeated Jamie Noble, and they got our main event between John Cena, Batista, and Ted DiBiase and Cody Rhodes.
Yes, and they can't coexist this time. They're arguing, and then Ted pushes John into Batista and rolls up Cena to get the tag titles back.
Yep.
I guess you could argue you didn't need to flip them in the first place.
No.
You're just going to do that, but especially since you did it last year as well.
Exactly.
After the match, Batista and Cena get in each other's faces, but then they decide to beat down Cody and Ted instead of each other. And Cena leaves, and Batista tells him to come back, but security gets in between them. So see him on Sunday at SummerSlam.
Yes.
All right, ECW from the Norfolk Scope, where DX once drove a tank to an WCW taping.
Yes.
Tommy Dreamer defeats Colin Delaney in an Extreme Rules match. Evan Bourne defeats Bam Neely. Teddy Long congratulates Armando Estrada on his new contract, which he also has a new Legends contract, so shout out to Armando Estrada.
Yes.
Good work.
Good for him. He's also managing Zilla Fatu at some sort of indie that's coming up, assuming Zilla makes the town.
Good. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, he was working with Jacob Fatu on the indies for a minute, too. So,
yeah.
See him staying in the family.
So, yeah, Armando's facing Finley tonight. Finley beats him. And we're coexisting again as Matt Hardy and Mark Henry are in action against Miz and Morrison. Matt Hardy and Mark Henry win because it seems like Miz was going to come in and break up the pinfall when Matt Hardy was pinning Morrison, and then the ref called it like a shoot, and Miz didn't do it, and the ref is going to get fired later this week. More on that shortly.
Mm.
More on that now, actually. August 15th, Stevie Richards, Colin Delaney, the Highlanders, Cherry, and referee Wes Adams were all released. I mean, not many surprises here. The Colin Delaney stuff has been dragging for months, and
yeah.
I mean, Stevie Richards got 6 years out of this, so good for him.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. SmackDown, also at the Norfolk Scope, obviously. We open with Jeff Hardy and Shelton Benjamin. Really good match. I mean, you can kind of expect between those two at this point.
Exactly.
MVP comes out late in the match, tries to kick Jeff, but he gets Shelton instead for disqualification. Jeff recovers and hits Swanton on MVP. They will wrestle at SummerSlam. Natalya and Maryse are in action, and they defeat Maria and Michelle. And, you know, Maryse is starting to get better.
She is. She's definitely starting to get better.
Good worker. Brian Kendrick, who is famously insane, defeats Scotty Goldman, who is Colt Cabana. So he's there now. Great Khali is going to end Triple H's career at SummerSlam. Triple H responds to this by beating Kenny.
There.
Big Show squashes the jobber. We get another R-Truth vignette. Kozlov defeats Festus, which that was fun, actually. You know, Festus is a nice little worker. Edge has kidnapped Vicky Guerrero, and they're heading to the ring, so they do that. And, you know, Edge is making a similar vow to Undertaker that he made to Vicky when they got married, and Hell in a Cell won't end until one of them die. Fair enough. All right. To SummerSlam.
From the Conseco Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, Indiana.
It is. And you know what? I like the stage. I like the presentation. I don't understand why they're doing all of that for Indianapolis when they could do, like, race cars or something.
Again, it legitimately seems like because they were going to L.A. following year that they were going to do this for L.A., but it was actually something happened and they couldn't do it this year, but they can do it next.
Yeah, but, I mean,
It's a whole movie set.
Yeah, maybe it's changed.
Summer blockbuster.
Maybe change the set at some point, you know? Yeah. Like, there's not blockbusters about Indiana.
Yeah.
Or Hoosiers. Let's
see.
But yeah, we lead off with MVP and Jeff Hardy. JR notes that this is Jeff's first SummerSlam since 2001, which is kind of crazy, but, you know, he was gone and such. MVP gets the win with the drive-by after Jeff misses Swanton. Really good back and forth, nice opener, and it seems like they're setting up maybe Shelton and MVP.
Yes.
Also, tonight there's going to be an intergender winner-take-all Intercontinental and Women's Championship match as Beth and Santino will take on Mickey and Kofi. Maria interviews Santino and Beth, and Santino does a good job playing up that him and Maria used to be a thing, so that was good. He was funny.
Yes, he was. Moving forward, in that match, Beth pinned Mickey for the win. It was more unique in theory than it wound up being. At least Beth and Santino are a fun combination.
Yeah.
Then after that, Shawn Michaels and his wife are there for a segment. He recently saw another doctor for his eye, plus another other injuries, and the doctor told him to retire. They said it's his decision, and he decided for the first time in his career it's time to listen to doctors and retire. So he's had a great career and regrets nothing, he says, and he's ready to go home. But then Chris Jericho comes out. The crowd gives a bit of a mixed response. He's getting some cheers now that he's good in the eyes of the fans. It's always was a time-honored tradition.
Mm-hmm.
I think people always like Jericho, but obviously when you gain the approval of that crowd,
yep,
it always happened in waves. Jericho said that he's not going to let Shawn do this. He's not going on his own terms because he's retiring because of Chris Jericho and wants Shawn to admit it. He told Jericho to leave. It doesn't concern him, but he said he's not leaving. He said he'll admit it. Told his wife and kids that he can't wrestle anymore because of the actions of a vile, worthless human being. Shawn wanted Chris to go home and tell his kids that he'll never be Shawn Michaels. Shawn went to leave with his wife, and Jericho went to punch him, but Shawn moved, and he punched his wife instead. Oh, no.
Not great. Very alarming. Very well done. One of the only things in the company that is working at the moment is
yes.
Michaels and Jericho stuff.
Yes, mm-hmm. It's literally the only thing
that really worked for them.
Yeah. Matt Hardy, Mark Henry is up next, and they get thrown out pretty much immediately. Matt hits Twist of Fate and almost gets a pinfall, and then Tony Atlas pulls him out of the ring for disqualification. Jeff comes out and helps Matt, and they celebrate. So that's nice, I guess, for the crowd, even though they both lost their matches.
Yeah.
CM Punk picks up a win against JBL after getting his ass kicked for 8.5 of the match's 10 minutes to tell you how his title reign's going. Triple H defeats the Great Khali. We've seen enough Khali matches to know how that goes. And now it's time for John Cena and Batista.
Yes.
Got a show that needs to be saved here, so yeah. Pressure's on. Batista does a figure four early in the match, which was kind of cool.
Yes.
Cena FUs him over the top rope. Cena goes for top rope leg drop, and then Batista catches him and power bombs him. And then Cena kicks out of that power bomb, and then Batista just pulls him up and hits another one and wins. And also, Cena's hurt.
If I'm not mistaken, he got hurt on that attempted leg drop.
Yeah, which is probably why that wasn't the finish, I guess. Because it probably should have just been the finish, because he grabbed him midair and power bombed him.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so more on that shortly.
Then we get Edge versus The Undertaker inside Hell in a Cell. And using the cell as a weapon right away. Undertaker brought the stairs into the ring. Edge threw him into them. Got the upper hand, got a table, also used chairs, lines and chairs. Oh my. Edge did an elbow drop through the table off the ladder, but Taker picked out two. He also speared Taker through the cell. Later on, Taker chokeslammed Edge off the top rope through two tables. These two guys are just killing each other. He brought him back into the ring, set up the concerto, and then Edge got up and tombstoned him. And, I'm sorry I read that wrong. Undertaker's not done. Pulled Edge off the top of the ladder, set him up, chokeslammed him through the ring. The fiery, he sent him straight to hell.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you know, for the feud that they've had, you know, it was a fitting ending. And this was just good stuff as well.
It was.
Not the best SummerSlam, but,
no. You
know, it was fine, I guess. And then we will keep moving here. Top five songs, up to five is Paper Planes by MIA. Staying at four is Take a Bow. Down to three is I Kissed a Girl. Staying at two is Forever. And up to number one is Disturbia. Top five movies, debuting at number five is Mirrors. Down to four is Pineapple Express. Debuting at three is Star Wars and Clone Wars. Dark Knight is finally down to number two as Tropic Thunder has moved up from number seven to number one. And, you know, we talked about Iron Man a few months ago, but Tropic Thunder did just as much to save Robert Downey's career, which is very funny in hindsight.
It is.
Yeah, people always conflate it to the blackface, and it gets lost on it that that's the bit. The bit is making fun of actors who dive so deeply into their roles that they just come off looking foolish as shit, and he was incredible. The movie as a whole, even if there's parts that you look back on, you're like, that's not, like, you know, for the times. Simple Jack's not for the times.
Yeah.
But it's a really good character for the movie and for what they're spoofing. And so, Tropic Thunder is a classic. 7-1 is so interesting because you never see, like, the second week buzz being so massive it takes you from 7-1, unless it was just like a super limited release and then this was the wide.
No, it doesn't look like it.
No, okay, then
yeah, no change in number of theaters, so yeah, it just got talked about, I guess.
Word of mouth just fucking, you know, shot it up, man. I remember I watched it maybe like half a year later and questioning why, like, what about the promotion was like, I won't see it in theaters. It's fucking great. I can only imagine what a theater watching this would have been like.
Oh, yeah.
It's so funny.
Absolutely. All right, we go to Raw from the Rosemont Horizon. Chris Jericho's here. He's not going to apologize because it's Sean's fault that something happened to his wife. He didn't put Sean's wife in harm's way. Sean did that. The fans are very upset with Jericho, including Harley Race, who was there but hasn't been introduced yet, so you just see him on the screen. Sean knew what he was doing, and he was done for good, but he had to do things the hard way. All Sean had to do was admit that Jericho retired him, and this all would have been avoided, but look at Sean now. His career is over. Last moment was him cradling his injured wife, and he's responsible for her injury, but that's what Sean deserves. Batista opens the action by defeating Paul Burchill. Mike Adamly is the new Raw superstar, Primo Cologne. He was going to talk to him, but then he immediately left because he had to go talk to John Cena instead. And then Cena crosses paths with Batista backstage, said last night Batista was a better man, and shakes his hand. Mickie James and Kelly Kelly pick up a win over Katie Lee and Jillian Hall. John Cena is in action tonight in a handicap match against Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase Jr. They then show Ryan Dempster in the crowd with someone else in the Cubs who I was not able to identify. But 2008 Cubs were hot. It was a big deal at this point. Repeated references on this program to how the Cubs and White Sox are both doing very well, and they're both maybe going to make the playoffs. And let me tell you, it does not go great.
We end the story right there.
It does not go well. They win. Right there. They win one game. JBL's here, picks up a squash over Jamie Noble.
Shane and Stephanie say they have a big announcement coming. I can only imagine what that is. Mike Adamly also has a few announcements. Punk will wrestle Jericho tonight. And Unforgiven, they will do a championship scramble. Punk versus Kane versus JBL versus Batista versus John Cena.
Well.
For now.
Yeah.
And that was also...
Yeah, that was their announcement. They weren't there. They didn't announce it. They made Mike Adamly do it. John Cena is in action against Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase, but Crime Time come out before the match and steal the tag belts, which makes Cody and Ted very upset. They're doing a lot for Ted in this match. He's clearly the guy that they've chosen to go with here. And you know what? Luckily, you'll get to fix that.
Yes.
Cody taps to the STFU, and that's the match. Do you think that Cody's going to wrestle Cena next year? You kind of have to, right? You never got to do Cena Hogan. You never got to do, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, you should.
Like, it won't be good.
No.
But.
You need the spectacle.
Yeah.
I agree. I hope it's not Saudi.
Yeah, it'd be unfortunate.
CM Punk's here. Says Chris Jericho's a bully and in Chicago they don't take kindly to bullies. And Punk is going to send Jericho a message tonight.
Yes.
And Santino came in and defeated D'Lo Brown.
He's also from Chicago.
Yes. Kane shocked us all last week by showing he seemingly killed Rey Mysterio and lets us know that he doesn't like Rey and doesn't like people who do. Said Rey is like a fungus that grows in the marshes of your psyche. So 6 weeks ago, in a parking lot, he took him out. We don't know if he's alive or dead. Batista came out, tired of Kane's shit, and Rey is his pal. I actually think I know what this leads to. This is going to be funny. Batista's bad, and he catches up to him, and Kane catches him with a choke slam.
Yep.
And then we do Punk Jericho. Pretty cool to see Punk in.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the title reign is bad, but he got to main event a Raw in Chicago. Like, you know, obviously he'll get to do that again, and, you know, it'll have bigger stakes down the line, but, you know, it's cool. Also, yeah, just a really good match. You know, you kind of expect it from these two, but, yeah, Punk... can't hit the GTS despite repeated tries, and he falls to a code breaker after a distraction by Lance Cade. So, again, the title reign is not going well, but, you know.
Yeah, it's not going particularly good. That's not. Are we really surprised?
Well, yeah, that's the thing.
We go to the Quad Cities. Moline for ECW. Chavo, Miz, and Morrison come out, and they beat Tommy Dreamer, Evan Bourne, and Super Crazy. Ricky Ortiz defeated the debuting Sean Spears. Kind of hilarious how that works out.
Well, yeah.
Finlay and Mike Knox argue in brawls and be pulled apart by agents. Matt Hardy won a rematch, got one, and lost again to Mark Henry.
He did.
Glad he did that.
SmackDown, also in Moline. Vicky Guerrero is here. The Vicky we've seen is not the real Vicky. She's a good person, and Edge was driving her to do bad things. Incorrect. She wants to make things right. Anyway, she's probably full of shit, and that will be revealed sooner or later. But SmackDown's also doing a big championship scramble, just like Raw, and there'll be qualifying matches tonight. Maria defeats Natalya by disqualification when Maryse interferes, and Michelle comes out and gets saved, kind of pick up from the tag match last week. Big Show wants to know who he's facing in the championship scramble qualifiers, and he's not in it because of an oversight, Vicky tells him, so that's interesting. They do a battle royal for one of the spots, and Big Show tries to get in that way, but he goes out and eliminates everyone, but Brian Kendrick's feet never touch the floor, and Big Show goes over the rope and, you know, to leave, and Brian Kendrick is a winner, so he's in the championship scramble, so you already know that they're not taking it seriously.
Exactly.
Which, I mean, Triple H just gonna fucking win it anyway, so does it matter? No. Like, you know. SmackDown is brought to you by AutoZone and Mercenaries 2, which is not a good game.
It's not.
Which is a shame, because the first one is incredible.
I don't even remember Mercenaries.
It was a PS2 exclusive, the first one. And basically what you did, like, you went into, I mean, it was, like, obviously fictional. It was, like, inspired by, like, North Korea, and you kind of, like, it's kind of like the Iraq 52 Most Wanted playing cards. They kind of did that, but with, like, North Korean adjacent stuff. And you could, like, order airstrikes and stuff. It was actually really cool. And then they made the second one, and it was bad.
LucasArts, that's interesting.
Yeah. R-Truth is still coming, so he will be there.
What's up?
Soon. Yeah, good for him. MVP defeats Festus by countout to qualify for the championship scramble. Another fun match. Festus is cooking. Shelton defeats Finley to qualify for the championship scramble. Also, great stuff.
Yes.
And Jeff Hardy defeats Kali to qualify, which was a little surprising.
It was. But good for Jeff Hardy.
Yeah, Triple H comes out, kind of goes down the four challengers that he's going to have to face, and eventually Kenny comes out trying to send a message, and Triple H pedigrees him again. I wonder why they're trying to bury Kenny right now.
Yeah, I wonder.
Well, he works there now, so good for him. Time heals all wounds.
Yeah, for me, so.
La Familia in the ring. Vicky is going to apologize to The Undertaker. Like she said, she would like him to please accept it. Undertaker got the microphone from her and said that he didn't come out here to accept an apology. He came for her soul. La Familia surrounded the Undertaker, and he could not fight back against them. And by the time he finally did, Vicky was, you know, hightailing it to the back. She's going to have to answer to the Undertaker sooner or later.
She will.
All right. Top five songs for the next week. Up to number five, Viva La Vida by Coldplay. Song that was everywhere. Down to four, I Kissed a Girl. Down to three, Forever. Debuting at number two, Crush by David Archuleta from American Idol. And staying at number one is Disturbia.
Like, this is where American Idol started.
Top five movies, Pineapple Express. Down to four, down to five, Dark Knight. Down to four, Death Race. Debuting at number three, The House Bunny. Debuting at number two, and Tropic Thunder staying at number one.
Yeah. On to SmackDown, on to Raw, rather, I'm sorry, from Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. CM Punk defeated JBL to open the show, kicked out of a clothesline from hell, and hit JBL with GTS. Mike Adamley is here with bad news. John Cena has a herniated disc and needs surgery. His championship scramble replacement will be announced later.
He's always there with bad news. What else is new?
Yeah. Adamley was seen talking to Primo again. He said that he has everything set up for him, just like he would for Carlito. Primo said he's nothing like Carlito. Shawn Michaels is here and looking for Chris Jericho. He says he's not there yet. Kelly defeated Beth Phoenix. Beth beat Santino up after. Primo defeated Charlito. Charlie Haas. Shawn Michaels came down to the ring, said that he appreciates everyone asking about his wife. She's hurt, but she's tough and is going to be fine. He also accepted that it was an accident, but then Jericho came in and blamed Shawn and the fans anyway, and Shawn has earned the right to come out here and tell everyone, and he supported him. Goodbye. But he didn't realize it would be so hard, so he brought his wife with him, and where did that get?
Yeah.
Shawn's not going anywhere. Jericho showed up on the screen and said, Shawn's lucky he's not in the arena. Last time Jericho faced Shawn, he destroyed him. Jericho knows what this is all about. He's trying to goad him into a match so he can sue him, bring him down, and bring the company down.
Mm-hmm.
Shawn says he wants the match because if he does what he wants to do to Jericho, they'll put him in jail, but in the ring, he can do whatever he wants. He doesn't want anyone held responsible for what he's going to do. And Jericho finally accepts, but Shawn told him to remember an eye for an eye.
Yes. Then we finally get our Cody Rhodes and Ted DiBiase versus Jerry Lawler and Hacksaw Jim Duggan match that they promised us a few weeks ago. And Cody and Ted get the victory. Crown Time are still holding the belts hostage and challenge Cody and Ted to a match at Unforgiven, which they accept. Batista tells Todd Grisham that his SummerSlam match was one of the toughest of his career. He has nothing but respect for John Cena, but tonight he's facing Kane because he has to stick up for his friend Rey Mysterio.
He does.
Santino defeats Kofi after Beth trips Kofi. Santino thinks Beth's going to beat him up again, but instead she kisses him, so that's nice. Josh Matthews and Candice Michelle went to the DNC. Yep. And Kane and Batista go to disqualification when Kane hits him in the knee with a chair and beats him down. ECW from Pittsburgh. Teddy Long announces that ECW will also have a championship scramble at Unforgiven. It's a shame. I guess they like their new match type.
I guess so.
Matt Hardy defeats John Morrison to qualify. Miz defeats Evan Bourne. Chavo defeats Tommy Dreamer. Finlay defeats Mike Knox. There's your ECW championship scramble.
Exactly. All right, moving forward. SmackDown, also from Pittsburgh. Taker told Vicky Guerrero that he's coming for herself.
Yep.
We get R-Truth debuting and beating Kenny Dykstra. Why? Reese told Michelle McCool that she's coming for the Divas Championship.
Mm-hmm.
Then Natty and Maryse defeated Michelle Maria. Reese and Michelle brawled after. Interesting. Jeff Hardy beat MVP in a SummerSlam rematch. Got time. Shelton hit both the pay dirt after. He's obviously getting involved. Ryder and Hawkins and Jensen Festus were scheduled for a match. The Big Show beat them all up and got tossed out. Said he will never be overlooked again, so we are back to pushing Big Show. Be debuting Brie Bella. Beat Victoria. So that is something that happened on this particular episode of SmackDown.
Yep.
And John Cena's surgery was a success.
Yes, and then the main event, Triple H and Shelton Benjamin had a really nice match. Triple H obviously picks up the victory, but yeah, I mean, they got, you know, 16 or 17 minutes. It was actually really enjoyable to watch, and kind of felt like their match that they had in 2004 a little bit. So definitely enjoyed that one.
Yeah.
All right, on to September, the first week of September, the week of Unforgiven, because, again, another pay-per-view coming up in a hurry. But, yeah, if you want to
– real quick. Obviously, I want to shed light on the fact that the 08 Olympics featured the insane superstardom of Usain Bolt.
Yes.
Michael Phelps.
Yes.
Jason Lezak.
Yep.
The swimming relay.
Mm-hmm.
The Redeem Team. All that fun stuff. The 08 Olympics, honestly, are one of my favorite Olympics ever. I watched it from beginning to end at my nan's house. I will definitely remember those ones for a very long time. Secondly, we unfortunately said goodbye to Gene Upshaw. Who had passed away from pancreatic cancer 3 days after being diagnosed with pancreatic cancer.
Yep.
He was a Hall of Fame guard for the Raiders and then was the longtime executive director of the National Football League Players Association.
Mm-hmm.
And then a few days after that, a whole mess happened that you may or may not remember from 2008 involving Brett Favre, traded from Green Bay to New York. Now, Brett Favre has obviously disgraced himself in the years since, and of the Vikings quarterbacks who recently realized that they have health issues, Tommy Kramer is probably much more deserving of your sympathy right now than Brett Favre, who is a unrepentant piece of trash.
True.
So we can move on to September.
Yes, your top five songs going into September. Up to five is Dangerous. Staying at four is I Kissed a Girl. Staying at three is Forever. Down to two is Disturbia. All the way up from number 71 to number one, Whatever You Like by T.I.
Jesus Christ.
It was big, man.
No, I know. Big. Like, that's a huge.
No, I know.
God. I mean, that kind of makes sense just because, like, I feel like Paper Trail came out, like, right around.
Yeah.
And that's when it started to get a lot more flakes.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever You Like was so huge.
Yeah.
And it's one of those songs that if I never hear again, it'd be too soon.
Yeah.
It was
everywhere. Overplayed.
The hook isn't that good. There's better songs on the album.
Yep.
So yeah, you know, I hate that. That's like become the definitive T.I. song because like, What You Want is exponentially better. He's got much better songs than Whatever You Like. But
yeah,
it is what it is.
All right, top five movies up to number five from 18 is Traitor. Don't know what that is.
Clearly, eating a bunch of money.
Yeah, I mean,
I don't know what Traitor is either.
Down to four is The House Bunny. Down to three is The Dark Knight. Or up to three is The Dark Knight. So people are still seeing The Dark Knight. Debuting at number 2, Babylon AD, and staying at number 1 is Tropic Thunder.
Traitor is a spy thriller featuring Don Cheadle.
Okay.
And Guy Pearce.
Yeah, okay. Not bad.
Not a bad 1-2. Not a bad 1-2 there.
All right. Raw. From...
The story is by Steve Martin. That Steve.
Oh, shit.
Yes, not anyone else. That Steve.
I
had to look that up myself because I was a little curious. It is that Steve Martin came up with that.
All right, so we start Raw from St. Louis, first by hearing that Killer Kowalski has died, which is unfortunate. Trained Triple H and
some
other folks, obviously.
I was going to say, I think he trained several others, too.
And then we are in the Scott Trade Center here for Raw. Randy Orton's here.
Hey, I know him.
Yeah, he's from here.
He is.
He's still hurt because, you know, broke his shoulder again.
Yep.
I had to stop by, see how things are going, and they're not going well.
No, nope, they are not.
He said Cody and Ted should be called Worthless. Does not like Beth Phoenix mixing up with the men. I mean, And Thing said CM Punk is a bad champion.
Okay.
Punk comes out, says that Randy's jealous of him, which Randy does not think that that's accurate. But Punk wishes he could face Randy tonight, but Randy's hurt, and Punk has a battle royal to prepare for. Randy says they'll pick it up at another time, and JBL comes out and glares at Randy as they pass each other on the ramp. JBL says Punk has an 80% chance of losing the title Sunday. Kane comes out and says Rey Mysterio is dead. Batista comes out and spears everyone. They appear to have multiple battle royals on the show tonight that don't have any stakes or don't impact how you enter the championship scramble, but they have all the championship scramble people in them. Sure.
Sure.
Kofi defeats Charlie Haas, who's dressed as John Cena, and comes out to John Cena's music. Ted and Cody confront Randy for what he said about them, and Randy slapped Cody and said that the two have talent, but they lost a handicap match against John Cena. They need to take a stand and make a name for themselves and also go get their belts back, which, I mean, fair.
Fair.
Mark Henry wins the ECW Battle Royal. Kane once again lets us know that Rey Mysterio is dead. Chris Jericho has a lawyer with him to look over the contract for his match with Shawn Michaels. Jamie Noble defeats William Regal by roll-up to get his win back.
Yes.
Mickey James, Kelly Kelly, and a returning Candice Michelle get the win over Beth Phoenix, Kaylee Lee, and Jillian Hall. That's nice.
It is.
Santino defeats D'Lo Brown once again and says that he's going to pass Honky Tonk Man's Intercontinental title record.
Honk on meter. Let's go.
Hell yeah.
All right. Cody and Ted beating up Crime Time, and they got their belts back, to which Randy Orton praised them. So we'll continue on. Kane won the Raw Battle Royal. Rey Mysterio is back and not dead and did a 619 around the ring post and Hurricane Ron and Kane into the crowd. That was crazy.
It was.
He will be in the match on Sunday. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho signed their contract. Jericho said he's going to end Shawn once and for all. Michaels finally gets a chance to speak and said Jericho forgot who Shawn was. He ended Ric Flair's career and he has no problem doing the same to Jericho this weekend. Unforgiven is a great name because he'll never forgive Chris Jericho. Lance Cade tried to attack Shawn while Jericho bailed, but he tried to get him, but he wiped out on the floor. Seemingly got hurt.
He tore his tricep.
Jesus.
It's not great.
No. But, if I may interject, you've got football to talk about.
We do.
College football, that is. Because you may have wondered, why did Raw punt this show and have a bunch of battle royals? Well, Tennessee played UCLA on Labor Day. The game actually came down to overtime. It was a back and forth game with 1:54. Montario Hardesty put Tennessee up 21-17 with 27 seconds left. So about 1.5 minutes later, almost, Ryan Moya caught a pass from Kevin Kraft to give UCLA a 24-21 lead. With time expiring, Tennessee's Daniel Lincoln kicked a 47-yard field goal, and then Kai Forbath, you may have heard of him before, kicked the game winner for UCLA to give them the victory, 27-24 over 18th-ranked Tennessee at the Rose Bowl. Fun stuff. Also that weekend, a sign of things to come, 24th-ranked Alabama faced off with 9th-ranked Clemson at the Chick-fil-A kickoff in Atlanta.
No shit.
And Bama beat their ass.
Yeah, well.
34-10. That Clemson team had C.J. Spiller. He had a kick return for a TD that night. But that was the beginning of Bama. Just that came off their 6-6 year. They got that first. They got that big kickoff game, and they rolled.
Yep.
I mean, Mark Ingram, 17 carries, 96 yards. Glenn Coffey, 17 carries for 90 yards. Got a Roy Upchurch signing. Julio Jones, freshman Julio Jones, caught his first career touchdown and caught 4 receptions for 28 yards. Leading receiver for Bama was Nick Walker, who had 7 catches, 67 yards, and a receiving touchdown. The top-ranked team in the nation that year, you may remember, in the preseason was Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
Georgia began their season with a 45-21 win over Georgia Southern. Fifth-ranked Florida, still with Tim Tebow, won 56-10 over Hawaii. Bobcats, they lost 27-22 against ECU. Not a great way for them to go out, especially since that ECU team didn't even have Chris Johnson, who was a rookie in the NFL this year.
Yep.
We'll be talking about him soon enough. Bowling Green beat Pitt, 25th-ranked Pitt. Found that to be kind of interesting and kind of hilarious. Nothing that eventful happened on the first Thursday. Miami beat Charleston Southern 52-7. Miami was still somewhat competent back then, even though they were about to head towards South. Mizzou, 6th-ranked Mizzou.
Oh, yeah.
Beat Illinois, 20th-ranked Illinois, 52-42. Wow, what the hell happened in this game? Oh, God.
Yeah, it's wild. All right.
That had been the McNamara's, right?
Yeah.
The McNamara's. Let's see. Are there any other big games that happened in week one? Not particularly. We can roll forward.
Okay. ECW, super crazy defeat Sean Spears. Ricky Ortiz also picks a win against a jobber. And then in the main event, Finley, Hardy, Dreamer, and Evan Bourne defeat Mark Henry, John Morrison, Miz, and Chavo Guerrero. So we move to SmackDown. Triple H hypes up the championship scramble and is interrupted by everyone else in the match, and then they all get into a brawl, as you'd expect. R-Truth moves to 2-0 with a win over Bam Neely. The Undertaker once again reiterates that he's coming for Ricky's soul at Unforgiven. He's going to send her to hell to be with Edge. Shelton picks a win over MVP, so I guess that was the direction they were taking. It just ended up being on a random SmackDown instead.
Exactly.
Maryse gets a win over Maria. She will challenge for the title on Sunday. Brian Kendrick gets a win over Jeff Hardy with help from Ezekiel Jackson. Super Crazy beats a jobber, and then Kozlov beats him down. Big Show comes out, and he wants to challenge Kozlov, and they're ready to fight. And Vicky Guerrero comes out and sends them both to the bag, tells The Undertaker that he's still her boss, and on Sunday he needs to apologize to her. Brie Bella defeats Victoria again, this time via twin magic. Interesting. Very interesting.
Very interesting.
Triple H beat Kali in a lumberjack match. The lumberjacks were the 4 other guys in the championship scramble, so, I mean, not really much in terms of lumberjacks. And before we do Unforgiven, we have week 1 of the NFL. The NFL's back.
Yes, it is.
New York Giants opened the season with a win on Thursday night over Washington.
I remember that game vividly, and the thing that I remember and the thing that you will remember when I say this out loud is Brandon Jacobs truck sticking LeRon Lambert.
Yep.
Sent that dude into another dimension.
Let's see. Bills got a win. Jets beat the Dolphins. Saints got a win. Ah, yes. Kansas City Chiefs against the New England Patriots.
Bernard Pollard.
Yes.
Big moment.
Well, you know, the Patriots almost went undefeated last year. They're clearly going to try and pick up on that this year. But Tom Brady suffers a season-ending injury in the, what was it, first quarter, second quarter? He was not in there very long.
Not in there very long, no.
I think it was the first quarter.
Yeah, I want to say it was the first quarter.
Yeah, towards ACL. And, you know, suddenly the NFL's wide open. Everyone kind of just thought New England was going to roll again, and things are open.
They are open. On this day, let's see, the Falcons. If you remember, also, talk about this. This is a historic season for the Lions in the worst way possible.
Yeah.
But if you remember, the Lions went 8-8 in 2007.
They did.
And they had actual optimism around this team going into the year. They were playing the Falcons, who were the laughingstock of the league because Michael Vick got caught in a dogfighting ring.
They also went 4-0 in the preseason this year.
They did go 4-0 in the preseason, too. And what happened?
Yep.
The first of many losses, the for the Detroit Lions and lost 34-21. Matt Ryan threw his first touchdown pass on his first pass to Michael Jenkins. Michael Turner, their big free agent signing, also had a huge day, a sign of things to come for the eventual MVP runner-up or somewhere close to that.
Hey, what's it like? What's it like signing a free agent running back who doesn't just get tackled 2 yards behind the line every play?
Well, the game was a little different back then.
That's true.
The game was a little different back then. Also, Michael Turner ran for 220 yards on 22 carries.
That's pretty good.
My God. And Darius Norwood had almost 100 yards himself on 14 carries.
Looks like 107 yards for Calvin in his debut there as well.
Yep. Well, no, that was his second
year. Oh, yeah.
Second.
Yeah.
Sophomore season for him.
The Eagles picked up a 38-3 win over the Rams. Donovan McNabb had 361 passing yards. Joe Flacco won his debut.
I remember the Cowboys-Browns game. I think T.O. had a touchdown.
Yeah. Cardinals beat the Niners. And then Sunday Night Football.
Chicago Bears.
Chicago Bears opened Lucas Oil Stadium with a victory.
Matt Forte.
Yeah, Matt Forte, big debut. That was a big game. I remember that
Didn't
one.
Didn't see that coming.
No, not at all. Seemed like Colts
the lead
would
up
just...
for that match being, oh, fuck, Kyle Orton's quarterback.
Yeah, exactly.
He led a rather fun season. Like, obviously, it's not fun when you don't win the last game of the year, but like, 08 from just a pure watching as a fan standpoint was a very fun
yeah,
season.
Forte was cool.
Yeah,
I liked Forte.
Yeah, no, he was good. And then the
can I briefly talk about college?
Yes.
All right. In talking about college, we have a new number one team. They're idle this week. Even though Georgia won rather handily over Georgia Southern, the new number one team in the nation is Southern Cal. Southern Cal, who started the year number three, who improved up to number one on an idle week two, despite winning 52-7 over Virginia in week one. So they are idle this week, but they are on the bye. Elsewhere, let's see. Bama won 20-6 over Tulane. Like I said, they are continuing on the right path. Auburn won 27-13. They're ranked ninth. The Elite Iron Bowl is not going to go well for Auburn. They have won six in a row against Bama at this point in time, for the record. So things are about to turn in a bad way for them. Let's see. Going on here, unranked Michigan beat Miami, Ohio, 16-6.
There you go.
At least you have something to be happy about over there. There's some bad vibes there, because I'm pretty sure this is the Tate Forcier years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, God. Third-ranked Ohio State beat Ohio 26-14. If you're an Ohio State Gator, you will love what happens to them when they go to L.A. in week three. Oklahoma beat Cincinnati 52-26. 18th-ranked Oregon won 66-24 over Utah State. This is a bridge year for Oregon, because 09 is when they start their best run ever. Let's see. Anything else? Not really. We can move forward.
Okay. Unforgiven 2008 from Cleveland, Ohio. The final Unforgiven.
Yes, the final Unforgiven with Batista on the poster, like rain falling.
Yes. We open with the ECW Championship Scramble. So you're going to have Matt Hardy against Mark Henry, against The Miz, against Chavo Guerrero, against Finlay. There's the first of three of these tonight, so hopefully the concept is good.
Yeah, the theme is Rock Out Motorhead.
Yes.
Yeah.
Correct. 20-minute time limit. Every 5 minutes, a new superstar comes out. If you score a pinfall or submission on anyone in the match, you are the champion for the time being. The champion at the end of the 20 minutes is the new champion. We start with Matt Hardy and Mark Henry, actually, and nothing doing in the first 5 minutes. And then Chavo comes out, hits a frog splash on Matt Hardy, and he's the champion for the moment. Matt hits a side effect on Chavo and pins him back, so Matt is the champion again for the moment. Then Mark Henry pins Matt, so Mark Henry's the champion. And then eventually, once everyone's in the ring, they take Mark Henry out, and Finlay pins Matt Hardy to get the championship back, but Hardy pins him back and then survives and gets the win. So Matt Hardy's a champion, but it's kind of confusing.
Yeah, very confusing.
Matt runs into Jeff backstage, tells him to go do the same thing.
have you ever seen, you, I don't know if you've seen it, I don't know how many times you've seen that show in full. The Hardcore Battle Royal from WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah.
This is what these matches are. But just with much, or at least perceived to be much higher stakes than just the Hardcore Championship.
Yeah.
But the execution is clearly not there.
No, and I mean, they clearly probably brought it back because of the King of the Mountain match.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's not a good idea either. Those are fun because, you know, they're bad. Cody and Ted retain against Crime Time. Fine match, not more of that. JTG had Cody rolled up, but Ted kind of rolled them over, so Cody was getting the pin instead. And then they brawl after the match, and a big Samoan fellow comes out and helps Cody and Ted, and it turns out his name is Manu. And he's off his son, so if he was around today, he'd probably be part of Bloodline. Yeah, don't really remember much about Manu. Again, was not watching here. Looks like he's gone by February,
yeah,
so...
He does not last long.
No.
The family obviously runs deep. That does not mean that everyone is successful.
Yeah.
All due respect. So move myself to think I can do better, but...
Obviously. Yeah. Okay, so yeah, they mentioned that Shawn Michaels suffered a torn tricep, but he is still facing Jericho tonight. So that is up next. Shawn comes out in street clothes, Chris in his gear. Real mark.
Come on, Jericho. Shawn
gets in and tackles him and starts punching, and away we go.
Okay. I get it from the perspective of Jericho thinks he's done nothing wrong, so he's going into this thinking he's done nothing wrong, and the situation is completely different.
Yeah.
But it's not. Just wear street clothes.
Exactly.
God.
Jericho gets the chair and gets the upper hand for a little bit, and then Shawn gets the advantage back, and he's going to go for sweet chin music, but instead gets back on Jericho and keeps punching him, but eventually Jericho gets one to Shawn's eye, and obviously that's a weak spot for him. So Jericho gets the advantage, gets him in the walls of Jericho for a little bit, and gets to the ropes, but that does not matter in an unsanctioned match. Shawn's able to grab a fire extinguisher from kind of under the apron from when they were outside, and he shoots Jericho with it to break up the walls of Jericho. Lance Cade comes out and tries to help, but Michaels takes him down and goes back to Jericho, but the slight distraction was enough for Jericho to capitalize, and then him and Cade start beating up Michaels for a little bit. But eventually...
I have to say, do we have to do so much with Lance Cade?
Well, no. He's another guy.
I really hate to be that guy. I understand that it happens anyway about a year later. If you were going to go after a former recruit from Shawn Michaels' wrestling school, what the hell did you go after Bryan Danielson?
I mean, yeah. Exactly.
Especially considering you ended up putting him with Jericho on NXT anyway.
Mm-hmm.
You could have gotten a head start on that and made Jericho appear even smarter than he apparently was.
Yeah. So Shawn is able to kind of get some of the advantage back, puts Jericho through a table on the outside, and then gets Cade on the announce table, and picks Jericho up and puts him on top of Cade, and does the elbow drop from the ring through the table. That was wild. Shawn brings Jericho back in the ring and takes his belt off and starts whooping him with it. He wraps the belt around his hand, and he keeps punching Jericho in the face, and the ref calls for a bell. The fans boo because they're not very smart, and they think that it was a disqualification, but it wasn't. It was a ref stoppage, and Shawn is the winner. After the match, Shawn keeps punching Jericho and then punches the ref, and he seems concerned with how violent he was. But you know what? The situation called for it.
They called for it.
Triple H wins the SmackDown Scramble. I mean, come on. Brian Kendrick was champion for a little bit. Jeff Hardy was champion with 10 seconds left, but Triple H pedigreed MVP and got the win.
That
was smart. Alright, speaking of scrambles, CM Punk is ready for the scramble tonight. He lets Eve know, but Randy Orton comes up to him, says that he's ready to continue their conversation from Raw. Punk says that, it's not really the time to do that because he has a match, and Randy does not because he's injured. Punk is talking, and Cody and Ted and Manu come up and kick his ass, and Kofi tries to help, which I thought was interesting. But...
Yeah,
so Punk is in dire straits at the moment.
Yes.
Michelle McCool retains the Divas title against Maryse. Not a very good match. but, you know, it's all right.
Exactly.
Mike Adamley tells us that Punk won't be in the Scramble anymore, so that's a real fucking stupid way to do that.
It is.
Probably just beat him if you don't want the title on him that badly. The Big Show's here. And it was kind of at this point that I realized they maybe didn't even need to bring him back, because they didn't have anything for him to do.
Nope.
And that would be the case for the rest of his run there, which will be 10 more years after this. So he could be the replacement for Punk in the Scramble, because Vicky left him out of the other one, and Big Show is sick of her. You know, it's an election year, so he wants to know if the crowd would vote for Big Show to be in the Scramble. They cheered, then he leaves, and looks like Mike Adamley has a decision to make, but instead Vicky Guerrero's here. She comes and really runs down the Big Show. And eventually the Undertaker comes out, which Big Show finds very funny because he's going to, you know, go after Vicky and then his problem's going to be over. But it turns out it was all a ruse and Big Show helps Vicky take out the Undertaker. And now we got a Big Show-Undertaker feud. Yeah, that's a shame.
They do have a good cage match.
Yeah. And it's time for the main event, Batista versus JBL versus Rey Mysterio versus Kane versus Unknown for the World Heavyweight Championship. Nothing doing the first 5 minutes for Batista and JBL. Kane shows up next and pins JBL after a chokeslam, so he's your champion for now. Rey comes out and attacks Kane a little bit, and then eventually it's time for the last guy, and it's Chris Jericho, who you may remember lost a match earlier and got the shit beat out of him, but he's okay. I mean, he's very beat up, but he's here, and he's okay. Batista gets the belt from Kane with 15 seconds to go, but Rey jumps off the rope and tries to get a quick pin on him. Batista looks like he's going for the Batista bomb, but while he's setting that whole thing up, Jericho pins Kane behind his back, gets the win, and Chris Jericho is the champion now. Mm. I mean, it was an interesting way to do it, I guess, and I know what it sets up, so, like, whatever. But
yeah.
I don't know.
It's another one of those these classic situations where Vince sees the big program and he has to push all of his chips in and can't and has to undermine everything else.
Yeah, but take one of the other guys out.
I agree. I'm just saying that like this was the logic of Punk's not a big deal. Jericho is. Jericho might be their big thing. We have to push with that.
Yeah.
They've done this so many times. So many times.
That's true.
One of the first like clear-cut cases of them being like, okay, we're just going to put the title on our main program because it's our biggest thing.
It's
weird how common sense wound up winning out in the end.
Maybe
you didn't have to take the Scramble to do it. I guess it was it wasn't clean because you just, you know, Punk didn't even lose the fucking title. This is some peak Vince shit.
Yeah,
but at least
exactly.
It was the right decision.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, he didn't put it on Kane or...
Right, he could put it on somebody that just absolutely didn't make sense.
Yeah.
And so at least it got transferred over to the hottest feud of the year. I can only complain so much when that happens.
That's true.
I think that's it.
That is it, yep.
We'll be back next week. We'll preview Bad Blood. We'll keep going, man. I'm at Cameron Santo. Rob's at Rob O'Neill 31. Chris is at Chris M. Novak, at BarberShareNet on Twitter and Instagram, Facebook.com/BarberShare. Check out the merch shop. Check out Saturday Night the Hollis heading into the Rams game. They will be in London for the showdown with the Jags in 2 weeks. So be on top of all of the coverage coming out of the BarberShare from London. All right, for Rob and Chris, I am Pierce. We'll see you guys later.